Hi there. Thank you for joining me for this elder law interview. On this interview, I am joined by Jason Gammel. He's the president and CEO of the American Resort Development Association. They are the trade group for the holders of timeshares. Jason was kind enough to come on and explain to me the way that timeshares are owned, the history of timeshares, how to advise clients to avoid scams, which are going through the roof and become only more sophisticated, and what a person can do if they want to sell their interest in a timeshare. We get a lot of questions about these assets when folks are preparing for Medicaid, planning both proactive and crisis planning, what to do with these interests. And Jason was kind enough to spend some time with me and really explain the history of this industry all the way to how to help advise clients. Hey, Jason, thank you so much for being here. Can you introduce yourself and a little bit about the Coalition for Responsible Exit?
Jim, thank you very much for having me today. It's great to be here, and hopefully today we'll have a little bit of fun and give ourselves a chance to give people a lot of resources that they need at the end of the day. My name is Jason Gammel. I am the president and CEO of the American Resort Development Association, and we are the trade association that represents the timeshare and vacation ownership industries. This association's been around for about 55 years, as long as the industry has been. And we're really, really happy to have provided a resource that you mentioned, Jim, the Coalition for Responsible Exit, along with our developer members and exchange companies and other partners, putting together a resource for timeshare owners who are looking to explore their options if, let's say, timeshare no longer meets their vacation needs. And they need to find out, what are my options? How do I exit the product? This website is there to direct them, one, back to their developer and give them all the contact information they can to see if their developer has solutions for them. Two, if they want to try to sell it themselves or rent it, if they're looking for options and people who they can trust, we have resources on that website to get them along that path and companies that are there that can help them do that.
Awesome. Thanks so much, Jason. I know when I was preparing for this interview, I got a lot of information off that website, and it is very helpful and a really good resource that's not pushing people one way or the other. So I really appreciate that. I know a lot of our attorneys have used that website as a starting point to advise their clients. But before we get into kind of the resources that are available for exiting the ownership, can you talk a little bit about the history of timeshares, how they were sold originally? Let's start there, and then we'll kind of talk about where the industry has kind of moved into. So as attorneys are looking to advise their clients that might have purchased at different points in time, what they should be looking for and kind of where it fits in within the timeshare world.
Sounds great. History of timeshare, we kind of go back into the 60s when the first products in the world were developed. It's largely credited to being a product that was over in Europe in the late 60s, when this concept of, well, if I have a condo unit or a house, and if I divide it up into 52 increments, weekly increments, for instance, it can be divided and sold that way so multiple people can use the same accommodation based upon a schedule, right? It was a great way to divide. You know, timeshare, we see the concept in so many places today. I often chuckle a little bit when I saw Uber, or you take a look at Airbnb, you look at all these different models that have come out that are based upon the shared economy and realize they're all one way, shape, or form about taking one asset and figuring out how to divide up its use over time. So really, when you look in the 70s and 80s, timeshare was really a real estate product for the most part. You had over in Europe when it wasn't, it was something else called a right to use timeshare, which is a license, which doesn't grant a real estate interest of any kind. But the primary vehicle was real estate. And that was because in the United States, the concept really flourished in the 70s and 80s after there was a big condo hotel bust. So all these structures that were out there that had rooms, they had kitchenettes, they had all of these accommodations really for vacation. They all of a sudden needed another purpose. And people came in there and decided to apply this concept to condo hotel and other condos and found that not only was it lucrative financially, but there was a real demand for it. for people to want to be able to have 1 week's worth of vacation a year, 2 weeks worth of vacation a year, but they didn't want the hassle of maintaining an accommodation year round.
Okay.
The sales and marketing techniques were very one-on-one, right? They were people trying to get you on a timeshare tour, generally speaking, offering an incentive. Right. They then out you on the timeshare tour. We'll say that nobody probably wakes up every day saying, today I want to buy a timeshare. But they do wake up saying, I want to go on vacation.
Right.
And they might just not know about the product. So this is part of that whole learning phase where that one-on-one interaction with the salesperson was a lot of times the first time someone learned about what timeshare was or why it might be something that was good for their family. I, as a timeshare owner, love it because it forces me to take a vacation every year. and I wouldn't do it, but it's nice to be able to force me to plan. So for me, I buy into it that way. It's great for me to plan. It's wonderful for me to do something with my family every year. But as that sales and marketing process evolved, you got into a point where it wasn't just an here's a deed to week 52, unit 201, and that's where you went every year. In the 2000s and all evolved to that there was a concept of exchange that really started in the 80s and 90s, became very popular in the early 2000s, where people could take their timeshare and trade it for stays all over the world, including non-timeshare accommodations. In the 2000s, we saw the advent of point systems. So instead of just getting a deed, you were getting representative points that equated into a certain type of reservation power. So I would know if I had 100,000 points, I could reserve a week in a two-bedroom unit. 200,000 points, I could get it for 2 or 3 weeks, all depending on where I went and what size unit I want. So really, it became more tailored. And if I didn't want to go for a week and I wanted to go for 10 days or for 5 days, that was possible too. So the product started getting very tailored in the late 2000s and continues to go that way today. And you see timeshare still sold at its base. It's still real estate for the vast majority of the time. It is a real estate interest, whether it's a beneficial interest in a trust, whether it's a Florida land trust, a deed to a Florida land trust, which we could probably spend a lot of time talking about that ownership model alone. But we also could see that it does come to, there are certain people that do it in an installment sales contract. And at the end of the day, you have a contractual right to use something that goes away after a certain period of time. So it has a natural end to your ownership. So we really kind of have two tracks when it comes to ownership. And when it comes to selling marketing today, you see a lot of stuff online, you have a lot of advertisements. People have different ways they can experience the product and the sale product versus just that face-to-face interaction that was there back, we'll say, in the original times.
Sure. Thanks so much for that. I think that gives a lot of context. So if you're talking to an attorney, you're advising them on when they have a senior come in, because a lot of our attorneys are working with seniors in the elder law process. And the senior says, I own a timeshare. I'm not using it as much as I want to. What are their options at that point? And how would you advise that attorney to kind of analyze that case kind of from the top down?
Yeah, we'll say attorney and or family member, right? Because that's great advice for people who are looking at the overall plan. So from attorney to attorney, what I would tell them first and foremost is to first really truly understand what they own. And I think that's a concept that it may sound basic,
right?
But what happens over time is that if people are very much using their product, which the happiest owners are the ones who use their product. So if these folks have been using it, they know it, they generally have a better concept of who they own with. And it's difficult because there has been so much consolidation in the industry that what may have been resort A in 2000, or even a developer who's been consolidated once or twice, could have a whole different name and have a whole different sort of, we'll say, look and feel 20 years from now. Not that it changes, but as developers acquire other developers, they may offer different products, they may offer different opportunities to upgrade into new systems. So it's important to know what they own that day. Do they own with a developer? Do they own an appoint system? Many times people might confuse their ownership with their exchange company. Those are RCI and II are the two major exchange companies that dealt with exchange. Many people believe I own with RCI. And they're like, oh, okay, well, what do you mean? Well, that's just the person I use to exchange my timeshare. Okay, well, who's your developer? Show me your ownership document. Show me the purchase contract. So at least we can start there and make some phone calls to make sure we confirm what you own. The second is to what's the plan, we'll say the plan for succession. If you have a client who owns a timeshare and they're starting to think, I don't really use it anymore, where now? The first place we go, and a lot of developers will help people with this for free even, is do you want to give it to a family member? Is there a transfer you'd like to do it? And since it's like real estate, it is real estate, it deeded, the transfers are the same way. It's a deeded transfer. Even if it's a beneficial interest in a trust, there's usually a document, a trust document that has to transfer ownership from one person to another. And they will have, and developers largely have title departments internal that can help you with those title transfers. I think that's an important place to go, is to know what you own, know if it's a real property interest or if it's a right to use. If it's a real property interest, you're going to follow your normal, or let's follow what it is. If it's a deed, it's just like a deed to your home. Yeah, it could be a special warranty deed. You could have whatever else you'd like, whichever way you like to convey it, it's convey it. And then understand if it's right to use. A lot of times it will be a transfer that you talk to the developer to do. If it's a contract, there's some internal workings that need to be done with the developer, as well as some papers you might need to sign. But in those cases, there won't be recorded documents, and it'll be something that someone's able to transfer, more like it was an assignment of a contract rights. So that's the first thing I'm going to say. First, know what you own.
Right.
Two, figure out real estate or not. Three, go talk to your developer, because if you're looking for your exit options, if that person doesn't want to be an owner anymore and they're happy, perhaps just giving it back to the developer. And that's important, Jim, to remember, product is sold as a used product, not for its value upon resale. After 20 or 30 years of using it, you've had a lot of wonderful memories. You've hedged against inflation because you bought it 20 years ago and you're not paying today's hotel rates,
right?
That you're worth 20, they've gone up significantly if you haven't.
Exactly.
Noticed.
Yeah.
So you realize that's when it's time for me to exit. And exiting sometime can just be, as I've talked to many people who've done it, giving that back to the developer. The developer will take it back and you have yourself a situation where that senior will feel like that part of their estate is taken care of if they don't have anybody else who wants to take it.
And you said the developers have kind of combined and moved around and changed names. How would somebody who purchased, you know, this interest a long time ago find out who their developer is today?
Although I'll give you a couple different ways to do it. One, if they know who they are, we do on the Coalition for Responsible Exit, we have a good listing of all the developers that are out there. And they're able then to click on the developer by logo, if they recognize the logo or by name, and get contact information. The second thing, which I think is a really good way to do it, because this doesn't go away, is the continued membership in an association. So with every timeshare property or every timeshare you own, you're a member in at least one timeshare association. Sometimes there's multiple. It could be master associations that go along with the association for your timeshare. And you will get not only a billing statement every year, but for your annual dues, but you're also going to get notices to vote. So you're going to get a couple of communications from your association, which is another great place to start, is to then call the association or the association management company. Because depending on whether you have an active developer, if you have an active developer, you're certainly going to have a management company that goes along with it, usually associated with that developer. If you're in a resort that's not in active sales, you could still have a management company, or your resort might be self-managed. Calling the manager or the association and asking is your best route, because they're going to be able to give you all the information, especially if you're going to need an estoppel certificate one day if you're going to transfer, which does right. happen. And if you're looking for information, they'll be able to provide you who your developer of record is. And that's the best way to do it, because you know you're going to get the bill and the vote. Those are two documents you're going to be getting every year for sure. That will help you lead to a phone number and a place to call to confirm who your developer is.
That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
I've heard a lot. I think I had some clients even brought this up. They said, well, I can't figure any of this out. It's too hard to figure out who's in charge of this. I'm just going to stop paying. Can you talk a little bit about kind of that rumor or that myth that's out there? If I just stop paying, they'll foreclose on me. I can get rid of this. And that's the best way to exit out of a timeshare interest. Mm-hmm.
There are a number, and there is that fallacy out there that perhaps is the best way to do it. And there's companies out there that may even consult, they may tell you that's the way to get out and just hope for a deed in lieu of foreclosure. whether you stop paying your maintenance fees, especially if you have an active loan out there and you stop paying it, that active loan acts just like if you had a mortgage on your property, right? So if you had a mortgage on your property, you're going to be in that situation where you have to deal with foreclosure and credit, people coming after you from a credit collections perspective. Right. And you're going to deal with most likely a ding on your credit and the collection calls. So there's stuff that takes place. You won't naturally get out. They won't just say, well, geez, if you haven't paid after 3 months, away we go. So this to me is a situation where you have to be very aware of what your plan is and what you do before you stop paying and what the potential consequences are for both credit and what happens afterwards in the collection process. It goes without saying that at some point, a delinquent timeshare, either on a loan or the maintenance fees, could be foreclosed. But as a full strategy for doing it, there's many things you should try before you get to that point in time.
Excellent. Thanks so much. I've also been seeing, I think I was reading the paper last weekend and saw something about the Mexican cartels are getting into these get out now services to help people get out. So there's a lot of bad actors in this kind of world. How would you advise an attorney when a client comes and says, well, I've been contacted, it seems like this is a good company to work with. How should the attorney talk to their clients to help, or even if the attorney has a timeshare and gets one of these calls, how do you vet a group like this, whether or not it is a good and legit somebody that wants to purchase your interest in that timeshare or not?
I am so happy you brought that up, Jim. Not happy because it's happening.
Right.
Yeah. But happy because it's important to have awareness as to what's going on with these particular scams. And this is going to sound, again, kind of basic. If somebody calls you or contacts you first, stop right there, right? Like 99.9% of the time, it's a scam. I just never really could say 100% because you just never know. It could happen. But if somebody calls you saying they have a buyer for your timeshare, you have to hang up right away. And the one thing that is attractive about that particular scam you bring up is that it preys upon the exact population that you're talking to, that we're talking to today, which is people who are involved in their estate planning, people who are looking at whether or not they're leaving assets or what kind of assets they're going to leave to their family and friends and their heirs. Are they want to leave cash? Do they want to leave this timeshare? If they're in a place where, well, nobody really wants this timeshare, man, would they want $20,000 in cash? Sure, that sounds fantastic. And one of the elements of this scam that is so tempting is that usually that first call, there is no ask for money.
Okay.
It's an ask for sign a contract. That's just, I've got a contract. I do have this buyer. We just need you to sign this contract. It's the classic commitment. We need you to commit. And once you're committed and you're excited about it and you start telling people about it, then I'm going to ask you for a small sum of money, for a transfer fee, or something that has to be done in order for us to make this happen. And then you start thinking, well, $1,500 fee to make 20, that still sounds pretty good, right? Another $2,000 to make 20. Okay, that still sounds pretty good. And before you know it, it's 5, it's 10, it's 15. And then once it exceeds anything or 20, not only are you in your negative spot where you're going to be losing money, but after you make that first or second one, your client then is committed and they're going to be embarrassed to talk about the fact that they may have made a mistake, and then things snowball. So really, you should know by the fact that they reached out and there's no buyer on the other line. There could be a buyer out there for your timeshare once it's listed by a licensed real estate broker or other avenues that you might be able to sell it on your own. But if they want you to pay money up front, the red flag is up, stay away. If they want you to wire anything, never wire money. It cannot be recovered. Once that Western Union is gone and it hits a bank account, whether it's in the U.S. or foreign, that's another thing. Just because it's in the U.S., because there's an office address. Many of these offices are virtual offices. And there are people who we've spoken to who've shown up at these virtual offices looking for company XYZ. And well, guess what? They're not there. They're just a simple mailing address. Now, don't trust the fact that it has a reputable name. Don't trust the fact it's just a U.S. address or a U.S. bank account where you're wiring the money. Wiring the money means that money is gone forever, and you have to know it.
That's really helpful. And these articles that are out there are really scary, and they seem pretty sophisticated operations to try to take advantage of seniors. So you did mention that if someone legitimately wanted to put their timeshare for sale, there's some brokerages or there's an industry out there that is legit. What is that like, and how would somebody who's looking to sell their interest contact that group?
We have resources. We go back to the coalition. We have members of our trade association who we vetted, who we have a history with, who we know who've been in operation for a number of years, who are licensed real estate companies. Those people you can find on the website. They're a great place to start. You know, they usually have a couple of different products. One of them is that brokerage services where people sell just like a home. You only pay when there's success. They have other models too, which are an advertising model that allows you to pay a fee where you can advertise. And it's almost like a for sale by owner on their own site. We always recommend you start with the real estate brokerage services first and see what it is. Part of that is being smart about what you do when you're looking to sell your timeshare. Be realistic about the price. And that's sometimes a bit difficult because people think, I've spent X dollars for this. Okay. I should be able to get 50% of my timeshare value back or 25%. You really got to do your homework and take a look around. And when you do brokerage services, the good news is they can offer you real estate services such as helping with pricing. They can give you realistic goals for what you think you might be able to get if you're looking to sell it. There's also some owner forums out there that people can access. And there's a great one. One of them is called the Timeshare Users Group. I like the way that site is run. It's a community of folks who a lot of times have posting boards where you can post to either sell or just simply ask people if they'd like to take over payment of the maintenance fee. They want ownership for the maintenance fee. That's a great way. It takes a little bit of work, but at the same time, a little bit of work at the end of the day can help you if you're looking to exit your timeshare to be able to dispose of that interest in a timely fashion and a place where there's a whole community of owners that are out there to help. So you can look at our listing. We have a resale service provider listing on the Coalition for Responsible Exit. We also have our owner advocacy side of our work, which is the Resort Owners Coalition, which is an organization, its own organization managed by ARDA that has an 800 number on our website on the ARDA ROC. It's ARDAROC.org. That is an 800 number you can call where we have people who can help you get to that list or help answer questions about how does this whole process work and what do you do to start taking advantage of it.
Awesome, Jason. Is there anything that I didn't ask that I should have before we wrap things up?
I think that's good. Now, again, one thing that everyone, and a little bit of counseling, and it's always great because when you're talking to a client and asking, putting your client in the right frame of mind when they're looking at this. They've had hopefully a lifetime of vacations that they're happy with. Even if they're not, it's important to remind people why they bought it in the first place. If they've used it, what they're looking to get at the end of the day, perhaps, is just find it a happy home, to be able to give it to somebody who's going to use it, which is great, and to understand what they continue to own and the fact that they've got options out there that then resources first to try before thinking about maybe not paying your maintenance fees or not paying your debts. First, try to work with your developer, especially if you're in a situation where you haven't been able to pay a mortgage payment. Go ahead and take a look because there's other options such as they have hardships that they can do, hardship waivers for loans. It's important though just to keep that information safe and secure. Counsel those clients not to fall for scams when the offers are too good to be true.
Right.
And realize that a lot of third parties, when they're offering to charge them a lot, significant fees, thousands of dollars to help them get out of their timeshare, make sure they explore all the things they can do themselves first, because there's so much they could do themselves first before thinking about paying a third party to do it.
Excellent. And what's the website address so that everybody knows where to go to get those resources?
Yep. So the resource is that it's all one word, responsibleexit.com. Just spelled just like it sounds, responsibleexit.com. Or if they're looking for, then they'll get to that 800 number the same way. Or they can look for resources on ARDAROC.org. So ARDAROC.org.
Awesome, Jason. Thank you so much for your time. This is really invaluable information for our attorneys that are trying to help their seniors figure out what's going on with these timeshares.
Happy to help, Jim.